as we know, we see it, it's very visual. We see still people going on boats trying to cross the Mediterranean or trying to cross the West Atlantic to go to the Canary Island. What we don't see is many people still are moving by land through very dangerous journey to try to reach North Africa. And what we would like to do is to try to prevent those dangerous movements.
How many people are you worried about? It's more than 20 million, isn't it?
Well, it's 20 million, but it's not 20 million on the move. I think those who are moving are the most able physically or manage to get some funding either from the family or from the diaspora to try to move.
Let's just break down the data a little bit, though. You've got, what, 21 million people from Somalia to Senegal. Those are who exactly? Asylum seekers, refugees, and who are the other people of concern to you?
Of concern to us are refugees who have already found protection in the country normally neighboring their country of origin. But because of the measures relating to COVID, many have lost their job, lost sometime their shelter, and some may consider moving onward to try to find better protection elsewhere. Then we have also migrants. They are not of concern to UNHCR, but these are people also who have been affected by COVID, either in their country of origin or in neighboring countries, and who may look at other options elsewhere.
One thing I know that people might be keen to find out about is how COVID has affected or impacted on migration, because what's clear from the report that you released is that human smugglers, human traffickers, they haven't had any trouble in going around the restrictions, have they?
No, absolutely. It's a market opportunity for smugglers and traffickers. They diversify their offer, try to make it sound more attractive for desperate people to embark on those journeys. And in order to circumvent border closure, in particular land border closure, they take higher risk. And some of the people, unfortunately, got trapped in those journeys.
Could you maybe tell me some real life stories that are featured in your report from the UN Refugee Agency? There was one that really struck me, a Somali boy who was traveling unaccompanied from Somalia to Ethiopia, to Sudan, and then to Libya, then ultimately to Malta.
Absolutely. And we get to hear people like that. They don't stop at the first country of asylum because either the conditions are not there, either because they were confronted to an incident in the first place they arrive and they feel it's not safe. Either sometimes it's because the traffickers have lied to them and told them, well, we have a job lineup for you in Libya. We'll make you cross through Europe. And those people don't realize that even before reaching Libya, they're going to get into trouble while crossing through other countries, because the so-called gentle smugglers actually turn very quickly nasty traffickers and use coercion to force people to work, to extort money and so on.
Does the migration happen to an extent because people are being fed the wrong kind of information? They're told that it's easy and there's plenty of work. I mean, people aren't that naive, surely?
Well, people are not naive, but they don't trust necessarily us, the international organization. They trust mainly the diaspora on what the traffickers tell them. And if there is only one chance out of 100 to make it, they believe they're going to be the one successful because a distant cousin has made it maybe to Europe and is sending nice picture on his Instagram account. But in reality, I mean, they are selling fake dreams to a large extent.
Yeah, let's just back that up with some data. I know your report says more than 500 people died trying to cross the sea from Libya in 2020, often on overcrowded inflatable boats, totally unsuitable for carrying huge amounts of people, which they seem to be often. Some capsized or they just deflate. Can you imagine the horror of this? So what is the UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency, trying to do with local governments?
Well, with local governments, we try to tell them to combat trafficking actively because there are too many non-human traffickers that have never been brought to justice, and that applies to many coastal states. But we're trying to work also with communities to tell them to offer another alternative, that there might be other solutions on the way. It's too late when the people reach Libya or reach the Western Sahara territory because it's going to be too tempting for people to go on those boats and believe what the traffickers are telling them. So we need to make sure that people think about those alternatives, that community back up that message with their own narrative, including people who have made those journeys, who come back to their community and who report to others what happened to them.
Could you tell me about some of your community initiatives? There's one that you call Telling the Real Story that tries to prevent smuggling and trafficking.
Exactly. That's targeting Eastern Africa, mainly Eritreans and Somali. We have mobilized diaspora in Europe and elsewhere to let the people tell their story, what happened to them. So it's unfiltered. These are videos, these are chat forums where people talk to people in their language and tell them exactly what has happened to them to try to demystify and debunk the narrative of the traffickers.
Where's your focus at the moment? Because Libya's been in turmoil for so long and it was such a pull for migrants. But we hear that Burkina Faso has a really growing displacement crisis too.
Yes, there's been a significant increase in displacement in the Western Sahelian countries. I mean, more than 30% more. So it's almost 3 million people displaced because of the conflict. Not that many people leave the region, mainly Malians, few citizens from Burkina Faso, but many stay at home. Those displaced in Niger stay in Niger. They don't embark on those dangerous journey. So that's one area of focus, Western Sahel. The other one is the crisis linked to what has happened in Tigray recently over the last 2 months and the displacement it has caused within Ethiopia and in Sudan.
Can you tell me about some of the solutions for placing people who need international protection with their families? I'm talking about family reunification. There are some pilot projects that you've launched with Egypt, Sudan, and others.
Yes, we try to look again at the narrative of many states saying, but legal pathways exist. People need to use them rather than to embark on those dangerous journeys. And we realize that in reality, those legal pathways are extremely difficult to access. If you are a refugee in a camp in Eastern Sudan, you may not get a permission to leave the camp to go to the capital city where, the embassy of the country where you have relatives may not be open or may not exist at all. So it's in reality very difficult for people to access this fundamental right that is family reunion. So what we try is to build the bridges and facilitate access to the documentation and simplify procedure for people. We'd like to expand that to West Africa also in order to target certain communities who are on the move only for the purpose of family reunion.
And in terms of your needs, your financial needs, in 2020, you needed nearly 480 million for the Central Mediterranean to handle the migration issues there. How much do you need now for the coming year?
Okay, we've reduced the funding request to 100 million for this year because we have excluded the Greece and Balkan situation, which is covered otherwise. And the idea is 100 million really to focus on the key activities that have a stabilizing effect on population that really offer proper alternative. So it's livelihood, it's cash assistance to people so at least they can get back on their feet until they manage to get a job on the informal sectors of the economy, as it is often the case. And that's what we would like to focus on, plus education, in particular for an unaccompanied minor, subsidizing foster families that can take care of them so those kids are not on their own and are lured by smugglers to embark on those journeys.
Could we quickly go back to the unaccompanied Somali lad? Do you know what happened to him? He ended up in Malta in the end, didn't he?
Yes, he did, yeah. I don't know what happened to him afterwards, but the majority of those unaccompanied children from Somalia, depending where they come from, they will get a protective status in Europe in principle.
And in terms of the sea rescues, I think a lot of people might be aware that it was very difficult for non-governmental organizations to get out into the Mediterranean to save people. What's the situation looking like now?
The situation, it seems that the Italian authorities are authorizing gradually NGOs meeting certain technical requirements to go back to the sea and operate those rescue missions. Unfortunately, it's an abnormality. I mean, NGOs should not be at sea rescuing people. That's a state responsibility. It's not just Italy, Malta, or Spain. It's a state responsibility for all coastal states on both sides of the Mediterranean. Unfortunately, there is a problem of capacity and there is a problem of will of states to agree on a regional disembarkation mechanism.
If you had one message for the international community, what would it be?
Well, invest in countries of transit. That's where we can make the difference. It's too late when we are in Libya or in Morocco. We need to invest in countries of transit. There are solutions. Majority of the refugees and asylum seekers, they stay in those countries. They don't move onward. 85% of the refugees, they say, next door to their country of origin. And we would like to create the condition for most of them to stay there because solutions are easier to achieve and the risks are more limited.
Have you got any success stories that you could maybe mention on air quickly in those transit countries?
Well, when you look at the situation in Niger, a country that is facing significant terrorist attack at its border with Nigeria, the border with Mali and Burkina Faso. I mean, they are still hosting more than 100,000 refugees from Nigeria, 60,000 refugees from Mali. Those people are not moving to Libya or elsewhere or to Algeria. They are staying in Niger. With the little assistance we give them, the communities are mobilized to find response to them. So there should be no fatalism about those onward movements. We may not stop everyone from moving on, but we need to create the situation where people have alternative than just to move on to very uncertain and risky future.